of Sportsnet 590 and the Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Leafs, Bruins, game four tomorrow night, Scotiabank Arena. Commander Chris Hadfield will be in the building again. Like one of the highlights of my career, getting a chance to talk to him. A true Canadian hero.
Well, other than every day when you get to talk to me. That's the chief highlight of your life. And then talking to the commander, pretty good.
It's true. Yep. So the Leafs trying to avoid going down 3-1. The Lightning are already down 3-0.
Oh, that's worse.
Against the Florida Panthers, who, yes, do feel like the team that the Leafs should have attempted to avoid if they had any control of their own destiny, which they didn't. Yep. But they managed to either way, and they still might lose. But yeah, like the Panthers look really quite good and have in the 3 games against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they can come back. This is the one sport where it's not just like the one 2004 Red Sox example. We have, what, four?
I think so, yeah.
I think 4 series in the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs that a team has come back from down 3-0 in.
I feel like you almost never see sweeps anymore either, right? Like, you always get back to respectability.
Oh, a gentleman's sweep? 5 games? Like the Leafs and Panthers last year?
I remember.
Yeah, gentleman's sweep.
Yeah, there's nothing gentlemanly about that.
Very gentlemanly. Even, like, game 5 overtime. What a gentlemanly sweep
like,
that
gentlemanly
was.
Gentlemanly in, like, a Peaky Blinders fashion where you just, like, punch a guy. Yeah. They're, like, dressed like gentlemen, but not really. Yeah.
Anyways, it seems more than likely that the Tampa Bay Lightning will be eliminated in the first round for a second consecutive season, and the Leafs playing a part in that. Wow. Incredible. Maybe ending the Lightning dynasty. It's hard to say it continues now after you lose in the first round back-to-back years, and your captain is a pending free agent, and he's not just a pending free agent. There's, like, explicit animus between he and the team as the way, in regards to the way negotiations occurred last offseason, was not super pleased with Steven Stamkos that the Lightning weren't talking about a longer-term extension with him, that they were going to let this thing play out, obviously with the expressed understanding that, like, whatever happens in the postseason might impact their decision-making here. And I think they were open to the possibility that something like this would happen, and there needs to be at least some sort of soft reset. Now, it's hard when you have Nikita Kucherov on your team and Victor Hedman and, you know, Brayden Point, and, like, I don't think they're going to strip it down or anything. But they've already committed $77 million to this roster next year, which the cap is going up to 87. You have like $10 million in cap space to fill out a bunch of roster spots. And I'm thinking Steven Stamkos, if he wants market value, he's not getting that in Tampa. Like, it does feel like there is a changing of the guard there.
It's entirely possible. I still think it is more likely than not that he winds up back there, just because if you're going to take, because I don't see the spot for him where it is not some semblance of a discount to play on a good team. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to take that, why wouldn't it be in the spot that you've had all the success?
And no state taxes.
And no state taxes and no pressure. And part of that is because he's earned the no pressure, because they've won. Like, this isn't just a Sunbelt thing. They've won, so they deserve the no pressure. But if you're going to take a discount to go somewhere, why wouldn't it just be there?
Well, but why? Okay, so I understand what you're talking about, but if you were going to do that, why wouldn't that discussion have already taken place last offseason?
Well, and why would you capitulate until you have to?
Okay, but also if you're the Lightning, so like, okay, what, he takes a discount, so what, he's taken $3 million? Like, he's not making, like, Mark Giordano money.
No, it's
going to be the same conversation we have.
Point per game player this year.
Right.
And so not the John Tavares conversation. Like, he's producing more than JT right now.
Okay, you're still largely bringing back a team that was life and death to make the playoffs until the end. And I guess part of that was not having Andre Vasilevsky at the beginning of the season. And then when you got him, like, it took him a while to reinvent himself as Andre Vasilevsky. But yeah, you're going to bring back a team again that has, okay, the guts of the team that won a couple of Stanley Cups and is in 3 straight finals, like, it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And you're going to gum up, what, almost half of the $10 million you have in cap space to the captain, who is still a good player. Yeah. But again, like, where's it gotten you? To a wild card spot and then a first round exit where you look, like, pretty significantly worse than the team that's at the top of the conference right now.
I think because all those guys are still there, if this was a Stamkos is the last domino to fall, I could see a pivot. But because all those guys are there, I think you just have to continue, to bring it back to your conversation with Damo earlier this week. You just got to keep on trucking, I think. You know, you look at the guys, the middle class on this team, they're not trading Eric Cernak, a 26-year-old defenseman in kind of his prime. He makes $5 million. You know, Anthony Cirelli's not going anywhere. Brandon Hagel's extension is kicking in next year, so he's certainly not going anywhere there either. I just look at it and think that it is more likely than not he winds up back there. I think it gets contentious. I think it gets a little nasty. Mm-hmm. I think he goes to the market and ends up taking meetings probably with the Leafs. Mm-hmm. But I think that when push comes to shove, it's if it's going to be roughly the same money, do you want to try something new or do you want to stick with what you know?
Yeah, there's a danger to that, right? Like you become the Penguins.
Yep.
Or the Blackhawks who held on. I mean, again, like you're talking about no trade clauses and and it being worth it, right? Like flags fly forever. And totally. Boy, it couldn't have worked out better for the Blackhawks who end up with the next generational superstar in Connor Bedard.
Funny how that works out.
Yeah, it is interesting. But yeah, like at a certain point, you do want to do the Bill Belichick thing where you side on selling too early than too late if in fact you want to reopen the winning window. And as great as Nikita Kucherov is, yeah, I don't know if he alone is good enough to win a Stanley Cup because clearly he's not even good enough to win a game in the first round against the team that is one of the favorites in the Eastern Conference. Leafs, Bruins, yep. As mentioned, tomorrow night. We'll see about William Nylander and his impact on this roster and this lineup specifically and where he slots in.
Mm-hmm.
What have you made of, okay, and we'll ask our next guest who is part of the journalism fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
But what have you made of the way this story has been messaged and then the changing of the story yesterday with the great reporting by Elliot Friedman that, in fact, it is a migraine that William Nylander is dealing with?
I think it was a miscalculation by the Leafs. I don't know why they thought it, but I think they thought they could just say, hey, he's not available. He's skating over here. And don't ask any questions about it. We'll tell you we got an update. I don't know why they thought that's the way it would play out. But yeah, I think the Leafs kind of mishandled it. Obviously, you have to keep the player out if you can't play. This isn't me saying they mishandled that part of it. But from a messaging standpoint, I think they wanted to keep it as quiet as it possibly could have been. But it's the Leafs and it's William Nylander. So as quiet as possible is not quiet at all.
Let's talk to our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Today's insider, Frank Saravelli, president of hockey content at DailyFaceoff.com. How's it going, Frank?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
Doing well. How do you feel about the way the Leafs have messaged the William Nylander thing and eventually the reporting from Elliot Friedman that he's dealing with migraines?
How do I feel about it?
Yeah. Have they not been forthright enough? Okay.
There is no forthright when it comes to the playoffs. You try and keep everything under lock and key, and if it comes out, it comes out.
Was it a mistake then to have him skating? So, like, No, you don't think so? Because I think if they'd wanted to not have questions about this, rolling William Nylander out and saying, hey, look at this guy skating is about as bad a way as humanly possible. I don't know. Maybe they feel like it's better to have the eyeballs there as opposed to what's going on with Marner or them trailing in the series right now. But that's the thing I thought was so kind of strange about it is how they seem to think they could just kind of not talk about it. But obviously it was going to be a story.
There's not one part of this that's strange to me. Every single thing that you do as a team, you try and do in the best interest of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So the first part of that is you want him as close to, you know, game shape as possible. You want him to be testing it out. You want him to see how it feels. So there's no harm in skating. So of course you want him skating. And if there's eyeballs on that, so be it. And then the next part with the reporting is you just give as little information because there's no NHL injury reporting requirements. So you do whatever it is that you feel like you have to do.
If he misses the rest,
there's not one part of this that's odd or has been mishandled.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you think that this because I think when you do, you know, like step back a bit, you're right. Like teams want to be secretive in the playoffs, But we also...
Well, no one's making them be honest, so why would you be?
That's exactly where I was going to go with this, is do you think that this was a bit of a... this could be a bit of a tipping point? And, you know, just let's be honest. You don't think so? You don't think that... Now, the only reason I say that, it's not that they owe us anything. This is... It's the NHL. We've heard wishy-washy injury reports in the playoffs forever, and I'm
they
not...
They owe Gambler
they
something.
They owe Gambler something. Like, how much of it is that?
We even go Gambler, to the god of gambling, Gambler.
We even go to the Swayman-Ullmark thing in terms of who's going to be the starter for Boston. Like, do you think with how many eyeballs are on this, there could be a change in terms of how forthright teams need to be it with starting goalies, be it with injury stuff, just because of the gambling? I don't think the culture of the sport needs to change, but the gambling element of it, do you think that there will be a kind of tipping point with this?
So we're talking about a couple different things here. We're like, one is what the Leafs should do or are doing. That's a separate thing than what the league should be doing and is doing. And then there's a whole other thing, which is what I think everyone should be doing and it is doing. In this case, when it comes to the league, they don't feel like they owe gamblers anything. One, because hockey is such a small overall percentage of the handle that sports books aren't beating them up to give more honest information. And two, part of this is part of the game. They feel like if you're going to take a risk and bet on hockey, which is maybe the most unpredictable in all of sports, that that's on you. You're shouldering the risk as the gambler.
No need to make excuses.
I was going to say, now the part that I mean, to me, honesty is always the best policy. I love the NFL. Here's the injury report. Here's who participated today. Oh, yeah. Here's everyone's status.
Yeah, Tom Brady being on the injury report every day of his entire career and never missing a game. Yeah, no, they're always on the up and up, those NFL teams.
Well, that's another part of it, is that even if you're seeing it in print right in front of your eyes, that you're taking them at their word, which... As a journalist, anything I see, no matter what it is, always comes with a healthy dose of skepticism.
Mm-hmm. As far as...
Here's a whole other thing, though, that I think is fair to point out.
A whole another thing.
I think are entirely different. And because of how... Or I should say, because of what we know about concussions, and we don't know that William Nylander has suffered one, only that he has symptoms that have presented that could be related to a concussion. Mm-hmm. That's something that should be revealed every time, because it speaks to the severity of the situation. It speaks to really, because of what we know, in that case, they shouldn't be... The wool shouldn't be pulled over anyone's eyes. Yeah. This is a significant head injury that, you know, could potentially need to be dealt with. And I'm not saying that Nylander has that, which also brings in some gray area. The Leafs don't know that this is a concussion, but when there is one, it shouldn't be called upper body injury.
No. The concussion thing is different because, yeah, I think we've all established that we're good with like independent neurologists like evaluating concussions, because the player needs to be protected from himself and the team needs to be protected from acting in its own self-interest without the thought of the player's long-term health involved here. This is a weird gray area, because like I don't know too much about migraines. Like, people just have migraines that haven't suffered concussions. I also know people that have had migraines because they've had concussions. Yeah, that part is weird, right? Like, who knows? Maybe William Nylander wants to play through this thing, and somebody is putting their body in front of it. Somebody within that organization, or like, what is the protocol for the NHL with the independent neurologists? And like, yeah, we very rarely see the concussion spotters. I mean, there was an incident in one of the games in the series, I guess it was game two, where Ilya Samsonov takes a puck off the side of the head, and you're like, oh, was that a concussion? It rarely are the goalies ever pulled from games to be evaluated for that stuff. But like, in off days, what is the protocol for the NHL's independent doctors looking at a potential concussion?
Well, there's really... not really a such thing as independent, I should say. I mean, are there people that should be there making decisions, you know, totally in the best interest of the player? Of course. But the reason William Nylander is not playing is because William Nylander used his voice to say something's not right. And that's not to say that the Leafs don't have his interest in mind. It's just that every single time, 100 out of 100 times, it always comes down to the player saying, I'm good to go or I'm not. Because that's the thing about concussions or head injuries is it's completely subjective and you can mask symptoms.
Yeah, I think you're bang on there. And I think there's also, and again, like we're all playing a bit of a guessing game here. It's like entirely possible that William Nylander said the thing and then like, I'm not feeling so right. And then we're two games into the series and he's going, what? I'm still not playing? This is ridiculous. I didn't see this playing out this way. Like it is entirely possible. Another big topic of conversation in this series is.
But if that were the case, yeah, he would have played in game three then.
Are you sure? Like he would. So you think if William Nylander says I'm playing, that's that. Because I think if it's a if
that's 100% the case. If he says I am good to go, he's playing.
That's interesting.
That's how it works, and that's the problem with all of the head injury stuff is that it always comes down to specifically what the player says and how he feels.
Do you think
and even if he doesn't feel good and says he feels good, how else are you going to know?
Do you think that that's why
there's the testing and whatnot, but even some of the testing can be gamed.
Right. And that's why I was, and again, like the Leafs would have been secretive about this. This isn't a Leafs thing. This is playoffs in the NHL. But from a public perception standpoint, it feels like it would be even more imperative then for them to keep whatever it is quiet. Because not that, like, I think Nylander's perception has come a long way, but God, you know segments of every fan base, certainly this one, that would hear, God, it's up to him, play or not play. And I would think the team would be trying to protect the player from that narrative at all costs.
Well, I think that's another reason to be honest. Is that every single person on the planet now, no matter how hardcore of a fan you are, should understand any player at any point saying, my head isn't right. And have no pressure.
So if he doesn't play in the rest of the series, which is also possible, although it does feel like the narrative is that he's gaining momentum to play in tomorrow night's game. If he doesn't play in the rest of the series, at least lose in this series to the Boston Bruins, how much will it be a caveat at all when we talk about, Leafs lost in the first round yet again, but man, no William Nylander. What are they supposed to do?
I don't think so for me. I mean, if the Vancouver Canucks lose to the Nashville Predators, are you going to look back and say, oh man, they didn't have Thatcher Demko?
I would, personally, me, yeah. I think goaltending, like I also think there's a difference between a top six winger, not that, you know, William Nylander's just that, and your starting goaltender, though, I will say that as well.
It's a huge deal. It's changed the complexion of that series. Every part of it's enormous. I just don't know that that's how necessarily things work. You don't just look back and 5 years from now, there's not going to be an asterisk next to this series that says, you know what? William Nylander didn't play, so, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, John Tavares missed an entire first-round series, and we certainly don't give, and, like, rightfully so, we certainly don't give the Leafs a break for that. Gamesmanship is such a big part of postseason series, you know, be it from the players, be it from the coaches. Sheldon Keefe did his best to draw a little attention to Brad Marchand. Do you think refs are looking at him a little more closely? Is his reputation kind of already set in stone? Do you think Sheldon Keefe took the right tact, drawing attention to everything that happened with Marchand in game three?
No, I don't. For one, you have fully admitted that Brad Marchand is living rent-free in your head. Two, if you want to work the officials, I understand that the idea of doing so publicly, sometimes coaches have been successful with that tact.
Against the Leafs, I think specifically, is probably why it lives rent-free in his head.
I'm not sure that that's how it works. And I'll take it a step further, and I'm going to venture to say that Sheldon Keefe has almost zero cachet with the officials based on the way he appears to talk to them. So if that was his plan, I'm not sure that that's working. Mm. And I think third and most importantly, and I've been a big believer in this for a long time, your team feeds off of your energy, your attitude, your comportment. Worry about keeping Brad Marchand off the scoreboard. Mm. What Brad Marchand is doing is the Stanley Cup playoffs. This has been happening for the test of time. Mm. He's become, he is elite, to use Sheldon Keefe's word, at towing the line. And more than that, he's not just a pain in the arse. He's a damn good player. Mm-hmm. So the focus should be entirely on not having him beat you instead of trying to game the officials or worrying about a call. And it just feels like yet another misstep in front of a microphone for Keefe.
Yeah, we'll see.
Auston Matthews scoring 70 is a major distraction. Mm. Brad Marchand not being able to keep him under wraps is the referee's fault, not ours.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like, I get the idea of trying to put that out there in the ether to draw everyone's attention to it. Everyone already saw it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, maybe he's doing the Gretzky. It's crock crap. You know, it's crock crap. It's just the crock is full of crap. Anyways, we'll see. We'll see. Maybe the officials, yeah, go the opposite route and they give Brad Marchand minus penalties tomorrow night somehow. I don't know. They award him penalty shots. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Ask Frank the question you asked me: is Brad Marchand getting a penalty tomorrow night? Just true or false? Brad Marchand one and over under 1 minute in penalty minutes for Brad Marchand in tomorrow night's game.
I mean, you could ask that of any game Brad Marchand's ever played.
But he's got zero through three games.
Yeah. I'm going to say no.
Yeah, of course.
I'm going to go under.
No. Yeah, I agree.
Nah, he's getting one. Nope. Yeah. Bruins leading 7-1 in like the final minute. Yeah.
Bench miner, Brad Marchand.
Yeah. Frank, thanks as always, pal.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, Frank Cervelli, president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. He was our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. I hadn't considered that possibility. The officials hate Sheldon Keefe so much. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You think we've been turning a blind eye in the first three games? Watch this.
Which again, is like exactly how you want the neutral observers arbiters of rules to act.
Well, none of this is all conscious, right? Like, I can't, even in my most cynical brain, can't be like, oh, the officials in the room before the game are like, screw that guy. Screw this team. Mm. And, like, let's watch the story of the
series. I don't think
they
make a point of saying, let's screw those guys. But I think if they, like, just, I mean, like, we all talk about our coworkers, and they're not, like, I guess, coworkers in the same way, but they're like, yeah, I kind of don't like Keefe. And I'm sure that conversation happens a lot before games. But this actually ties perfectly to the hobby horse I've been banging since the start of this series of why Brad Marchand gets to play the game by different rules. Daryl Sutter came into Toronto and said into a microphone, I've been getting hosed in this building by officials for 30 years. I don't hear officials say, oh, God, we have to go. Like, we don't hear this, that Daryl Sutter's never going to get a call and his team never going to get a call. We see this all the time. Maurice does the 5-1 or 6-1 or whatever it was. It is a...
Couldn't have done 6-1 because he only has five fingers.
No, it's a great point by you. Good job. Yeah. He's not an alien. Maybe I don't know. I haven't been paying close attention. Maybe he's developed an extra thumb in there in the time. But I look at it and say that it is just infuriating that it is a... I honestly think it's a Leaf problem. You're telling me Sheldon Keefe's the only coach in the league that gets in guys' face and screams at them? Wrong. Mm-hmm. Wrong. You think Patrick Waugh is going, excuse me, sir, I'd like to have a very moderate conversation with you about something I feel different. I don't think that's happening. And yeah, he's Patrick Waugh, and that should matter. But Sheldon Keefe has coached in this league for a while now. There's, what, three longer tenured head coaches in the league? And it is infuriating. It's the same thing I say about Marchand. And part of it is the championship DNA and being a winner and yada, yada. You can't tell me that if Brad Marchand's wearing blue and white, we're all sitting here talking about how he games the officials, and that's anything other than a black mark on the officials. But here we have to shake his hand and say how good he is at it. No. And he is good at it, but he's only good at it because the guys who are deciding the rules go, oh, God, He's so good at towing the line that we set.
Yeah.
It's infuriating. And is it human nature that if you get screamed at by a guy, you're not going to want to give him the benefit of the doubt all the time? Of course it is. But guess what? You're supposed to, that's what the money's for. You're supposed to get yelled at and still be a neutral observer or arbiter or whatever you want to, or whatever way you want to look at it. It is infuriating.
No, if Brad Marchand was a Leaf, he'd be in Millhaven serving like the first of seven consecutive life sentences.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, for licking. Be like, okay, it's a bridge too far. We cannot have it.
When we come back, Blue Jays lost the series in a very bizarre way yesterday in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Talk briefly about that, but more, look forward to sold-out weekend series against Shohei Ohtani's Los Angeles Dodgers.
I thought you were going to say we were going to do like Dan Shulman, like turf care tips because the rain delay yesterday. It's like,
I feel
like,
well,
like
if he had some, maybe they would have continued the game.
Rain, okay, so
they didn't. Dan Shulman next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Breaking down the top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. I hate sitting in traffic.
Agreed.
The worst part of it, though, is like when it happens unexpectedly, and like I don't know how long it's going to last. Kind of like yesterday's rain delay in Kansas City. Who knew how long it was going to last? I mean, the end result was something I thought we would hear about much earlier than 3.5 hours it taking for the rain to subside and then an attempt to get the field in playing condition and then decide that, no, in fact, the game is in fact over. What was it like for our next guest? Dan Shulman joins us on the line. How's it going, Dan?
Well, rain delays when you're sitting in your own house with the comfort of your television, your fridge, your cozy pillow, your slippers, those are a little different than rain delays when you're actually at the ballpark.
Playoff hockey to switch back and forth between.
Yes.
Not that we weren't locked in, you know.
Yeah. So was there anything weird about the process? Because, yeah, John Schneider didn't seem all that pleased about it.
So, listen, sometimes Mother Nature is just, it's unpredictable, right? And these things can't be handled perfectly. And there's a little bit of hindsight here, but I think this could have been handled better. And I'm not talking about the fact, you know, whether the Blue Jays were up a run or down a run or were going to win or lose. I'm not talking about that at all. Like, everybody knew this was coming, you know? And I said it in the open off the top of the show. I'm not sure they shouldn't have, like, never even started the game. But if they start the game, you know, it started raining, I don't know, in the second or maybe the third. And by the fourth, it was pouring. I was amazed. So the Blue Jays hit in the top of the fifth and they don't score. So they're trailing.
Yeah.
I was amazed they played the bottom of the fifth. That was another 15, 20 minutes of water. Because in that inning, Jose Berríos would throw a pitch, get the ball back. And the same as Cole Reagan, step off, try to dry your hand, try to keep the baseball dry. So now you're like 25, 30 seconds between pitches, and that was 15 more minutes of water. And then they decided to cover it up. And I just thought they, A, shouldn't have started it, B, stopped it too late. And then, you know, we knew what they were going to do. We knew there was a window, and they were going to try to make the field playable, but it took an hour to make the field playable. And that's when it got a little ridiculous because we could see sitting in the booth, Chris Guccione, the crew chief, he'd go talk to Schneider, then he'd go talk to Quatrero, and then he would disappear for 10 minutes. And then it would come back and go again and again and again. They would keep walking around. And if Chris Guccione felt the field was unsafe or not playable, I think he's entitled to say, I don't think this game should resume. It just took so long for them to get to that point, and I think it probably could have been handled differently earlier on.
Yeah, the easiest way to have fixed this would have been to just not have started, you know, Schneider, and I think he's right to point out the comments of, hey, how much worse was it than what Bichette had to field in at various points in the game? But the thing I kind of look at with that, and, you know, I know this is no solace to Schneider or a Blue Jays fan this morning, but just because you made a poor decision earlier in the game doesn't mean you have to make one again in the interest of fairness. At least that was kind of my read on it. Like, I understand the frustration from Schneider and the Jays perspective, but I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there with, if it's not safe to play, it's not safe to play.
Yeah, and listen, if it's not getaway day, it's a totally different situation, right? Like, it's 100% right. Different situation, but it's the last game of the series, and the Blue Jays aren't going back there, and that's what makes it tricky. And I said this to a few people, like Kansas City's literally going to be here next week and there's a mutual off day. But I was told under no circumstances was it ever considered for the two teams to play here, say next Thursday with Kansas City as the home team. There was a possibility of the Blue Jays going back there on the Thursday. There was a mutual off day in September they talked about. But, you know, what you're talking about is somebody on the West Coast and you're only allowed to play 20 days in a row. And the Players Association gets involved. And obviously, like everything, there are more layers to this. And it's a little bit more complicated than we think it is in the moment.
Yeah. And my take on it is if in the world of the expanded playoffs in Major League Baseball, it comes down to one game that you miss the wild card because of this game that you weren't leading, like you don't deserve to be in the playoffs anyways. I think we're beyond that. But now we start this incredibly, I don't know, anticipated series against the Dodgers, Dan. There is not a ticket to be found for any of the games this weekend against Shohei Ohtani's Dodgers, which, you know, is not unusual considering the way they packed that building after the new renovations. But this feels different from my perspective. You're going to be there, obviously. Does it feel like a different series than a normal April series against an out-of-league team would feel?
It does from the hype and the fan point of view, not from the on-the-field point of view. Like, to me, is this on the field between the white lines? Is this any different than Atlanta coming in or the Yankees coming in? I don't think so. But from a hype point of view, there's no question. I mean, you know, A, the Dodgers bring hype, obviously. B, they have Shohei Ohtani. And C, and C's the big one, is a lot of the people who are going to the game tonight hoped and maybe thought that Shohei Ohtani was going to be a Blue Jay. And I think that's actually the biggest part of it. And I think it's going to be a bit of a charged atmosphere tonight. And I think a lot of people are there to cheer for the Blue Jays. I think some people are there maybe to get on Ohtani a little bit because, you know, they had hoped he would come here and that's their prerogative. I don't think it's going to bother him much and I don't think it'll last all that long, but I think it'll start, you know, there'll probably be a little bit of that at least at the beginning of the game tonight. But yeah, I don't want to say it's going to feel like a playoff game because that might be a little bit too far, but I think it's going to feel more than a typical sold out regular season game.
Yeah. I think what's going to be interesting is how different the tenor will be to his visit last year. I mean, there were 40,000 in the park for the entire Angels series when they came to town, but that was more as, ooh, this oddity, he pitches and he hits. And you know, if you're a sports fan, he's just one of the guys from this era that you'd love to say you saw in the flesh. That was it was almost like he was the 10th Blue Jay on the field at any given time. Like, you wanted the Jays to win, but if he did something special in an Angels loss, that would have been great. It's just going to be very jarring to me how different the tenor is going to be this time as opposed to last.
Yeah, because there will be some people, and I don't know if it's 1,000 or 5,000 or 10,000, or we'll find out tonight, who will feel that he and or his representatives use the Blue Jays. I think some people will feel that. Mm-hmm. I don't know how true that is. I know he seriously engaged with the Blue Jays and, you know, John Schneider was there, Ross Atkins was there, and we know he went to Dunedin and all that, but you know, who knows where the plane story came from, who planted what, where, how serious was he? Those are all great unknowns and we are never, ever, ever, ever going to get I don't think the answers to those questions, but I think some people in the ballpark tonight will feel that, you know, his representatives use the Blue Jays. And I think we'll hear how they feel about that, at least tonight. I think it'll pass, and eventually it'll turn into a baseball game, but I think there'll be a little of that early.
I saw your tweets, everybody, not you, Dan. I'm talking to the listener. I saw your tweet about, you know, Shohei Ohtani being on a flight to Toronto. Yes, ha, 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 it is true that he was on a flight to Toronto yesterday for this series. He's having a remarkably similar season.
Hang on a sec. What tweet did I put out about Shohei Ohtani?
No, I said not you. I said,
oh,
I
was not talking, me. Okay.
I said not
all
you,
right.
The other listeners.
Who, okay, yes, listeners, yeah.
Yes, who, you know, made fun of us for, like, glomming onto one tweet he was, like, actually finally on a flight to Toronto is the joke, right? Yeah.
Oh, yesterday. I see. I got you. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, good one, Ben, and everyone out there.
No, it wasn't me. No, I said I saw everybody else's tweet. Anyways, he's having a remarkably similar offensive season to the one he had last year where he was the MVP. He's not pitching this year, obviously, so it's... Yeah, maybe he wins the MVP on the strength of his hitting alone, which, I mean, he's more than capable of doing. It's tough as a DH, but boy, he's an incredible offensive force. The Blue Jays are probably more than one bat away, but man, put yourself in an alternate reality where, and Justin Turner has been so good for this team, so I guess you have to kind of subtract his bat to add the Shohei Ohtani. But doesn't it feel like they are, because the pitching has been so, so good, that like one unreal bat, like Shohei Ohtani's or Juan Soto's bat, and I mean, we're talking about a different result in what, like five games at least this season?
Do you like causing yourself emotional pain, Ben?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it, Dan.
Leafs playoffs. Tis the season, Dan.
How is this helping you?
It's not.
I mean, yeah, he's one of the, you know, if he's not the best hitter in the game, he's one of the top two, three, four, whatever you want to say. He's a fantastic player. You're right when you say you would subtract Justin Turner. And obviously it would have been awesome for them to get Shohei Ohtani. But the bigger issue to me is, and I always thought this was the bigger issue, is people spent 98% of their energy in the offseason on who they should go get and 2% of their energy on what about the guys that they have. And the guys that they have to hit better than they are hitting right now. So Ohtani would have made an extraordinary difference. Justin Turner's been great doing what he's doing. But, I mean, all you have to do is look at the numbers and see the overall team numbers and know that, say, Springer and Guerrero and Bichette and Kirk, like these guys are all significantly hitting under their career averages right now. And they know that. I mean, Bo talked about it openly a few days ago, how the top three has to do more. So I wouldn't, you know, you do you, but I wouldn't recommend, that's a lot of dead end energy for me. Yeah. Like,
healthier to be in your world than mine.
Well, my world's not totally healthy, but you know, like let's talk about the guys who are wearing the Blue Jay uniforms, you know, because they're the ones who are actually going to determine whether this team is a playoff team or not. And I hope they give Addison Barger some real run here and however long he is up. And I hope the guys who need to hit more start hitting more. I hope Varsho keeps it going. But I also wonder when the point is, and I don't think we're there yet because John Schneider was asked about a point blank a couple of days ago about, you know, making changes, changing the order. And there's only so many things you can do. And, you know, he pretty emphatically said they're not there yet. But, you know, another week or two of this, and I think they've got to consider some things, whether it's changing the order, changing the playing time of the guys on the roster, or, you know, even another roster move up and down, try to get some hot bats into the lineup. Like, these games count.
You mentioned Varsho there. I mean, as far as good stories on the Blue Jays go, I mean, we can obviously look at the pitching staff as a whole, but from an offensive perspective, he has been far and away the best story so far. I'm not expecting him to fall off a cliff by any means, but how sustainable is this? I mean, the Blue Jays traded Gabriel Moreno for Dalton Varsho because they thought something close to this was possible. I don't know that this is sustainable, but just how close to this version of Varsho do you think they can expect over the rest of the season?
I'd like to think it's pretty close. I mean, I think he has been hot, and you know, there's somebody told me many, many years ago, you know, never make big decisions. Like, nobody's as hot as they appear to be when they're hot. Nobody's as cold to be as they appear to be when they're cold. Like, you know, never. It's a snapshot. It's a moment. I would like to think he can keep pretty close to this going. He's made significant changes, and he has stuck with them. I've always felt, and I'm sure I've said this on your show and the other shows, last year he was in a really tough spot. You know, traded for one very popular player and one very highly thought of prospect, come on in and try to balance the lineup because they don't have a lot of left-handed bats. Brandon Belt is coming off knee surgery, so instead of hitting sixth, you're going to hit fourth. So protect Vladdy and help lead us to the playoffs. That's a lot for a 26-year-old guy who had never been traded before. So I think he's in a much, much, much better kind of mental, emotional position in year two. And he's a tinkerer and he's a perfectionist. And those are two hard things to be. And he's not tinkering anymore. He's trusting the process and putting faith in the results. And so far, so good. And I think it's been great. And I think he's kind of being easier on himself, too. And he's got teammates who support him like crazy. He's a really good player. Like, he's a great defender and a great base runner. Anybody who doesn't see that isn't watching closely. I know you guys see that. And I don't think he's ever going to be a 300 hitter. I don't think that's him. But his 260 is really powerful because there are walks in there.
Yeah, like a loud 260.
And you know what? They need loud on this team. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of quiet 260s and 240s. But he's a really loud 260 with the power. and the walks, and you put the base running and the defense in, and I know you guys both like analytics. Go look at Baseball Reference or Fangraphs. I looked yesterday. He's top 10 in WAR in the major leagues in both. He's a heck of a player right now, and he's a heck of a person. And I think, you know, I hope close to this is sustainable, but, you know, if he can hit 30 homers and steal 15 bases and walk 70 or 80 times and play gold glove defense, that's a hell of a player. And I think they've got a really good player. It's still too soon to evaluate a trade, and whatever. This is the player they have, and right now he's actually been their best position player this season, and it's not even close. So I'm really happy for him because he's a great guy, and he's a, you know, he's a workaholic, and he just does everything he can do to get better. And he's as good a teammate as there is in that room too. And I just hope he keeps it going.
And he's a Packers fan, which I mean, come on, full disclosure here. Come on. What are we talking about?
Like, the lead.
So you mentioned some lineup changes or maybe, you know, making this lineup a little more offensive oriented. I'm excited about what Addison Barger has in store. And yeah, for an 0-for-4 game, I thought there was a lot to like out of those at bats, and not the least of which is hitting a ball almost 400 feet to straightaway center field. Like I'm excited to see what he has in store. His natural position is third base. Like, do you think it's possible? And we're seeing more David Schneider against right-handed pitchers. Like, is it possible we get, with no Kevin Kiermaier, that we get a few more lineups against righties with David Schneider in left field and Addison Barger at third base?
I think it's possible. I was a little surprised they put him in left field, to be honest with you. So now, you know, the top four in the order are mainstays, obviously, and either Jansen or Kirk are going to be in there, and Barshow is going to be in there. So second base, third base, left field are the mix and match right now. To answer your question, yes, you can have Biggio at second, Schneider in left, and Barger at third base. I think they did what they did because they wanted Clement in the, like, Clement was in the lineup 2 days ago and Schneider wasn't. So if Clement is in the lineup, who do you put in left field? You could put any of the three there, actually, Clement, Biggio, and Barger. They're all kind of equally inexperienced in left field. Biggio's played a lot of right, Barger's played a lot of right. So, but yes, I think if Schneider is in the game, then you put him in left field and you put Barger at third. I don't see why you I have a dog.
I've ever heard your dog, I think.
Must have been somebody within a kilometer and a half of the front room to get excited. So why not put him in a more comfortable position if you can put him in a more comfortable position? So, but I think that has to do with Schneider being in the game. If Schneider is, and it seems to me what they're doing first is basing their lineup not on what position can you play. It's, do we think you're a good matchup against the other team's starting pitcher? So, you know, you put IKF and you put Clement in that pool as well. And of the five of those guys, three of them are going to be in the game. So, yes, I agree with you. If Schneider's in the game, I think Barger should be at third. If Schneider is not in the game, I guess you put Barger in left and it becomes a little bit more comfortable to him every day. I mean, he has played right. Mark Budzinski told me because he came up as a shortstop and then became a third baseman, he's used to the left side of the field, and that helps. You know, that first ball that was hit to him was as tricky a ball as can get hit, like a slicing liner right over your head. And then he recovered and made a great catch up against the wall later in the game. He's young and athletic and works hard and eager to do whatever they ask him to do. But it is a lot to ask a kid to come to the majors for the first time and play a position they've never played. It's very unusual. So I hope they sort this out. You know, maybe he gets very comfortable very quickly. But yeah, if Schneider's in the game, Schneider should be in left.
Yeah, also just jarring for a guy who's a bit of a utility man to have played all over the diamond and never been there in his professional life. Last one before we let you go. You are a wonderful play-by-play man. We lost maybe the greatest play-by-play man in Bob Cole. You're a Canadian. You do the job. Your thoughts on one of the all-time greats, Dan?
I mean, you know, from how many years do I remember watching Hockey Night in Canada, and he was the voice, like, I mean, he is, I think, is significant, the most significant play-by-play man, along with Foster Hewitt, I would say, that this country has ever had, right? And Foster was just a generation earlier. You know, I couldn't even count how many hockey games with Bob Cole. And He was incredible. I mean, he just made every game sound like the most exciting game there ever was. I think whatever team you're rooted for, now I'm coming at this more from a Toronto perspective, obviously, but he just had a unique, wonderful sound. And, you know, I think back to when the Leafs were in the playoffs, say like 92, 93, like those years, and Bob Cole is calling the games and the Leafs are the underdogs, playing the Red Wings and then the Blues and then the Kings, and he made everything sound incredibly exciting. You know, like when Wendell Clark would throw a check or take a wrist shot, or Gilmore would make a play or something like that, everything sounded like the most exciting thing I've ever heard in my life. And he was fabulous. He was, I only met him once and it was very brief, which is kind of crazy, but you know, we were in different professional worlds but I, you know, all the highlight clips I've listened to, like you guys have the last few days too, like they just take you back in time. Right. And so much of my, I don't know if it's childhood, but definitely teenage years, and then into my 20s and 30s, obviously, were spent watching him on TV, and he'll be missed. He was unbelievable.
Yeah. Well said, Dan. It's a loss of the greatest ever, call that sport for sure. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy a very exciting series this weekend.
It should be fun. Thanks, guys.
See you, Dan. Dan Schulman, given his remembrances of Bob Cole. That is surprising that Dan's only met him once in his professional life.
It isn't, though, right? Like, it's like they're just calling different sports and different buildings, and you would think at some point crossing paths, but like one guy's working all summer and all winter, one guy's working all winter. Like, it's just, and skipping the Brier. You know, it's hard to make time to meet Dan when you're skipping in two Briers.
That's true. And everybody does a Bob Cole impression.
Boy, do they.
Does anyone do a Dan Schulman impression?
I don't think so. People do Matt Viskirgin. Like, I love to give you a Santa Maria.
Yeah. I think it's quite, you know, it's a positive for Dan that he doesn't have like this catchphrase. I think it's cool if you got one, but like, if you're just so great and you're regarded as one of the best ever, and it's not because you have some kitschy thing, like that's good. But yeah, I've never in my life, and it's rare for somebody who's been part of our sports watching lives. It's
interesting,
for as long as Dan has, I don't think I've ever heard anyone do a Dan Schulman impression.
No, it's like impersonations of his partners, right? Like Dickie V, all done that, or like a Buck, of course.
We've all done a Buck.
We all have, okay? Yeah, you're right.
Who amongst us
has not? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you're right. There's something about that. I didn't want to like put him on the spot, and I know he's no longer connected, so I can say this now. It's like, what I would give for an Oh Baby or an Everything Is Happening Tonight. Ooh, yeah. What I would give for that.
I don't know. Yeah. I guess. You're right. It would be a nice homage.
But it's like, you don't want to force it.
Yeah.
It's his thing.
Oh Baby.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm fairly confident we get one tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think somebody might work it in.
You're right. That's probably true. I think the most appropriate place might have been when we talked to Chris Hadfield on the launch pad, and like, 2-1. Oh Baby.
Yeah. And again, as we said, that is a place where not everything can happen. Like, only
Apollo 13, the lights are going off. Everything is happening.
They're like, but like in a good way? No. And hey, a lot of
Houston, when everything is happening.
When Bob Cole said everything was happening, it was almost certainly disaster for at least half the people involved in that hockey game.
Yeah.
So, man, God, we're so lucky. Like, we really are. Like, Bob Cole, Harry Neal, soundtrack of my life growing up. Solo Job, we heard it at the beginning. My personal favorite is him sending the Soviets packing with "They're Going Home." And God, it's he's the best. We were so lucky.
You're going home right now. I'm staying around today.
Yeah, I know.
JD's
free work, your favorite.
All right. Back on Monday, another edition of the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning. I love you, Ben.